You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
That was Dateline there with If You Want It. Before that was Felipe and Rodrigo with Mantra and Big Thief, UFOF, to start that wee set off there. You're listening to Art Bank on 95 BFM. My name is Rachel and we've got Finn McCann-Jones in studio. Kia ora, Finn. How are you?
I'm really good. This is so nice to be up here chatting with you.
It is nice to be up here. You're not unfamiliar to the old BFM studio though, are you, Finn?
No, I used to do the BFM kids show for many years.
There might be a few people who recognise your voice out there. Then I'd imagine.
Listening to Lee this morning. Good morning, Lee, if you're still around.
Tuning in. Yeah. But we've got you in studio today because we're speaking about Looking at the City, which is walking tours that you're doing with David Strait.
Yes.
So do you want to introduce that and maybe introduce yourself a wee bit too?
Yes, my name is Finn McCann-Jones. Good morning. And sometimes I practice under the name Finn Ferrier with my artist name, and sometimes they kind of merge and crash and come apart. It's quite funny maintaining two names. But anyway, this is part of the Auckland Arts Festival that's happening at the moment in conjunction with Object Space, and David Strait has a show of photography on the architect John Scott, which is currently on at Object Space. So head up there in Ponsonby and have a look. And so this conversation with David and I started a while ago. He published a book called Vernacular Landscapes, looking at the kind of cool, ordinary things that people make and that exist in our everydays, but just paying attention to them. Mm. And so I remember he contacted me and he's like, Finn, I hear that you like rocks. Can we go for a walk? And it's so much fun walking around with another kind of nerd. You know, he's a photography nerd, and, you know, when you're walking with a photographer, you see some people's photographs and they just tune into aspects that you're not quite aware of. You know, you see them, but it's just how you frame it and see it. And so this is what the walk is. It's like I'm nerding out about rocks in the street, and he's kind of looking up and nerding out about vistas in the building. And we're just peeling back the layers of the city. And I was talking to you off air about how the city isn't kind of one place. It's a whole lot of moments that are just shoved together. And in that coming together of spaces, there's a lot of strange leftover spaces. There's some quite exciting spaces. There's some really interesting juxtapositions and laneways. And so our walk, we don't tell people where they're going, but we take you to a corner of the city that we guess that you probably won't spend much time in. We took the first walk yesterday, and it was cool. A lot of people on the walk would be in a space, and all of a sudden, because there's this huge range of ages and also time living in the city, I suppose. So the experience of the city for people was a lot deeper.
Spans different kinds of experiences.
So all of a sudden we're standing there and somebody from the group would pipe up and just tell this kind of super esoteric story because they're reminded, because of the physicality of the space that they're standing in. And transport you somewhere. And it's, you forget that the city has these layers in it. And so the idea is to not let the city eat you up. You know, you come in, you try and find a park, you try to go to the shop, you try and do all these things, and you usually use the city as a tool. Yep. And so the idea of this walk is that actually you're wandering. You're doing the activity that you do on the beach.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm trying to kind of get people to understand that the city is the beach, you know.
I really like that. And we were talking as well, because you've got a lovely collection of rocks here in the studio this morning. And it's not what maybe people would normally expect a collection of rocks to be, because as you were saying, this kind of activity, this wandering, you do normally do on the beach or somewhere where you're collecting maybe semi-precious stones or lovely, lovely bits of quartz, things like that, that you might find while you're having a route around in rock pools and things like that. You've got bits of asphalt from Queen Street You've got a little bit of the funny pebbles that sit around the trees that are planted up in
along the high street.
Yeah. So maybe do you want to talk a little bit about some of these amazing rocks you've got there, mm-hmm. and some of the writing that's on them too, and why you've got these in the studio today?
So, I mean. Sometimes it is hard to explain to somebody. You're like, I collect rocks, and they're like, oh yeah, me too. And they have like, yeah, crystals,
beautiful crystals, yeah. And you're like, oh, I've got a bit of asphalt.
And so for me, I suppose it's like the whakapapa of the material, and you know, thinking that, you know, when you walk past a building that's made out of granite, it was a mountain mm-hmm. on the other side of the world, mm-hmm. and it's come here and it's been kind of reassembled. But then also, you know, those histories that are in our landscape. And so I like to think about them as the landscape within the landscape. And so, for example, you know, Grafton Bridge, I've got a little bit of rock here that was spilled out of, well, it's aggregate concrete and with little stones in it that was spilled out of a wheelbarrow when they were building Grafton Bridge. And I found it amazing that, you know, just walking around and spending that time, just spending time with the bridge, looking mm-hmm. at it, that I saw this spill of concrete, and it's just right there, like on a rock.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of it, and I just picked it up. Yeah. No buildings were harmed while collecting these rocks. And the whole bridge is made out of local stone that was collected as shingle on the beachfronts and then mixed with cement and then poured. Like if you look in the heritage archives of how they made Grafton Bridge, they boxed it up and they just poured wheelbarrow after wheelbarrow of cement in there, all from the local beaches. So that bridge is actually a foreshore, but it's a bridge, you know. And so then you start to look at it and you realise all these kind of lovely stones. And same with, for a while, I think in the 1920s, they were mixing local oyster shells with tar, and so the pavements are these kind of beautiful starry black and white things. And of course a lot of the curbstones, especially if you live in the inner city suburbs, come from the quarry in Mount Eden. And so once you start to look and unpack the city and look at it for its material nature, there's so much of our city's richness is just there in front of us. And so, you know, trying to be a little bit romantic about it and imagining kind of, you know, the fingers of lava flow as curbstones kind of moving through the city or some of those little moments. But now also, you know, it's wonderful that the mountains are actually have stopped being demolished.
Yes, it and is. Very wonderful.
Yes, it's very wonderful. They're still fighting for one. And you know, the Maunga collective that has come together to really protect these Maunga. And so I see these bits not just as aggregate, but as an extension of the Maunga.
Absolutely,
and our landscape. And so, I mean, we're talking off air about, I find it sometimes really hard when you see a building or the street or whatever that has beautiful raw materials that have taken billions of years to make.
Yeah.
On the facade of a building, and then it just gets like knocked down and dug into the ground. And as I was saying to you off air, it's like, how long does a million years take? A million years.
Exactly.
So to get that material again, we have to let the earth go through its processes.
Yeah.
And the way that we are going.
Yeah, yeah. And that's something that's also really interesting as well, is just bringing a consciousness of the spaces you're walking through or living through as well, through the materiality of it. And all of the different ways that culturally we can approach this as well. I think walking is a really accessible one, because it means it's something that you kind of do anyway. You know, you're sort of, you have to go from A to B in the city. But as you were saying, not approaching it like a tool or a chore, but thinking really about the spaces that you're living in and the spaces you're walking through or moving through.
Yeah.
That's something that is, it's kind of... it's very grounding. Grounding is also maybe a bit of a pun in this context, but it really is quite grounding to think about space like that.
It's a luxury. Like, you realise that you spend so much time in the moment going between things that it's quite hard. Even like sitting down reading a book is that luxurious thing. It's like when David and I were planning this walk, it's so wonderful to actually carve this up. This is my, you know, my job is to make a walk at this moment.
Yeah.
And so David and I were preparing our walk, and we're walking around, and at one point we kind of looked at each other and we're like, man, this is so great.
Yeah.
Like, we realized we hadn't actually just been in the city with any other purpose apart from walking and looking. And yeah. It's like, oh, it's a lot. And we came across this building, and if you come on the walk next week, so next Saturday we've got another walk, and if you Google Object Space Ponsonby, you'll find all the details.
The info.
And there's one building downtown that every single brick has the maker's handprints baked into the building. And so
amazing.
It's amazing. And so you walk around the corner and all of a sudden you see a handprint, and then you, as your eyes churn in,
yeah,
you see 1,000 handprints and finger marks. And just that whole idea that a building has been made
by a person. Or people. Yeah.
Everything in our life has been made, or in our human life has been made by people or whatever. But you forget that because often the hand is removed.
Yeah.
And I do like what's, at the moment there's the whole kind of craft revival, and people are becoming more conscious of having well-made, good objects in their lives. And so seeing a building and going, oh, right, somebody has dug the clay, formed it, baked it, taken it out, shipped it into town, built it with their hands. It's kind of one of these lovely, the building becomes human again.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And it also brings it back into a very physical thing as well. It's a lived thing. It's a thing which has a life beyond the spaceness of it, if that makes sense. It's not just a holding space. It's not just a thing that keeps the rain out or whatever. No. It's a whole life in that space too. Yeah.
And same with there was one moment with somebody on the walk who they, we encourage you to bring your camera along, because there's quite a few neat little spots that we go to.
Mm.
And the delight when you see that moment, but you see it in the architect's vision, and you think, oh, somebody has thought about this. And there's so many moments, I think, in our lives that there's not, like when you go to look at old architecture or you experience a space and you fall in love with the movement or how you kind of travel through the space, or there's something so right about it. And you get these glimpses in the city. A lot of the time you're just kind of like, it's hard. You feel kind of like battered by going to the supermarket. Oh, which way do I go? And then to see these moments and somebody to have the urge to get their camera out, and they see the kind of the beauty of the light and the thing. And so it's very romantic.
I think what I like about this as well is there's many political elements to it. But if you think about the context of living in a housing crisis at the moment that we are experiencing, across the country, but Auckland specifically has such a big issue with that. When you think about houses being built quickly and poorly for people to live in, that's such an unsustainable way of fixing a problem. You're really just sort of sticking a very thin plaster on it that's just going to cause a bigger issue down the track. It's I think this idea of meaningful use of materials, meaningful and thoughtful building is so important for something like a housing crisis. It makes you really conscious of things that will last and work for people and be safe and warm and dry and all those things. I think that kind of consciousness is something that really does lack in some planning as well.
And this kind of appreciation of things. And I should also, we're talking off air about Ngāti Mū Blair, Ngāti Whātua, who just has an amazing understanding of the city from Te Ao Māori.
And I was saying I remember a lecture that I had at Elam in my second year, I think, where Ngāti Mū Blair came in and spoke to us about the Māori history of Tāmaki Makaurau. And it was one of those moments where it was very, oh my God,
the mountains are different, the rivers are still there, but I mean, like Queen Street is the gully in Waihu, Horatiu came down. So we start our walk actually in the middle of the ocean, but it's been infilled, and Apihai Te Kawau, the paramount chief of Ngāti Whātua, we're right in the middle of the land that he set aside for Pākehā to come and to come to the city. So the walk brings out these layers. So starting off on the kind of a geological level, looking at Māori Pākehā and where we are at the moment, and just those kind of wonderful layers of being in the city. So next Saturday, it's you must book. It's at 11 a.m. So if you go Google Object Space Ponsonby, you'll see it there, and walking tours with David Strait and Finn McCann-Jones. Come along.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for popping into the studio this morning, Finn. It sounds like a really wonderful project, and I hope lots of people head along to the next one too.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.